The topic that we're going to speak about today is something which is mentioned. There are many halachas actually that are touched upon in Parshas Bishalach, but there is one in particular which I think is plays a role. It's an attitude that we have when we do mitzvahs. It's not specifically a mitzvah in itself, although it really is, but in the bigger picture, it's an attitude towards mitzvahs. And that is something which is derived from the pasuk which we have here on the sheet. We have in the Shira, in the Oz Yashir, that the Klal Yisrael said, so they said among the praises of Hashem that they said, Ozi v'zimras kov ahili lishua, that Hashem is my strength, and He was for me a salvation. Zeh keli v'anvehu, this is my God, and I will beautify Him. Elokei Ozi v'arom emenu, the God of my father, and I will uplift Him. The words Zeh keli v'anvehu, this is my God, and I will glorify Him, are words that gave rise to a number of drushes in the Chazal, a number of interpretations that we find in the Chazal, but the most prominent of them is something which we find in the Gemara Masechta Shabbos on the Kuf Lamed Gimel. Now I just want to apologize a little bit for the appearance of these sheets. The financial crunch has hit the yeshiva's office, so we're trying to squeeze as much as we could into as small of an area as we could. So I apologize that it's a little bit squeezed, but if you look at the very bottom of the first page, we have in the Gemara, it says as follows. The Gemara says four lines from the end. It says, "Tanya Zeh Keli V'anvehu, this is my God, and I will glorify Him, I will beautify Him." The Chazal say, "Hisnoel l'fanav the mitzvahs," that this pasuk is teaching us that we should be beautiful, that we should beautify ourselves in front of Hashem in the performance of mitzvahs. What does that mean? Asay l'fanav sukkah noa, make for Hashem a beautiful sukkah, the luluf noa, beautiful luluf, the shofar noa, beautiful shofar, tzitzis noa, Sefer Torah Noah, and so forth. The Gemara is telling us over here that the idea that we derive from this pasuk is that when a person does a mitzvah is supposed to be done in a beautiful way. It should be done in a very nice way, and therefore a person is writing a Sefer Torah, the Sefer Torah should be written in the most beautiful way. A person is making a sukkah, so we all know that we, from practical experience, sukkahs could be made in any number of ways. Nevertheless, the Chazal are telling us that a person should endeavor to make a beautiful sukkah, make a nice sukkah, make a nice, have a shofar, make it nice. Maybe have a Sefer Torah, make it nice. This is all derived from the pasuk of Zeh Keli V'anvehu. And this is the general concept, which is the topic of today's shir, of Hidur Mitzvah. Hidur Mitzvah means the beautification of mitzvahs and the requirement to beautify a mitzvah. Now, the Gemara lists off a number of examples that we just mentioned, but by no means is that the full list. The Gemara is just taking a few things that we commonly come across, but it applies to anything, to any mitzvah that's done. A person should try to do it. You know, very often there are different ways the mitzvah could be done. You can get by doing it sort of in a haphazard way, in a cheaper way, let's say. But the Torah is telling us over here, Zeh Keli V'anvehu, that the Klal Yisrael said, this is my God, and I will beautify Him, meaning that when I do the mitzvahs, I will do them in a beautiful way. And we know that as far as when it comes to the discussion of Hidur Mitzvah, most commonly you hear these discussions when it comes to Sukkot time, because we have the idea that the Arba Minim should be, that the Lulav and the Esrog, it should be done, it should be very beautiful. So too the discussion comes up on Chanukah when we have the idea of Hidur Mitzvah, the Mahadrin and the Mahadrin Minim Mahadrin, the amount of candles that we light. But we have the overall concept of Hidur Mitzvah. Now, as I say, Hidur Mitzvah has different manifestations, right? One of the general idea is that it should be nice, that it should be nice. In certain situations, the Chazal determined what is considered nice. In other words, there are certain, for example, when it comes to buying esrog, Right? So there are certain halachas that pertain to the buying of it, to the purchase of an esrog, that it has to be clean, for example, shouldn't have spots on it. That is something that the Chazal determined to be hadar. Right, so when the Chazal determined it to be hadar, then it's not, that's something that we have to go by. We don't have the option in that. So too, when it comes, let's say, to the Hanukkah candles, so the Chazal say that the lights of Hanukkah, we have the concept of Mahadrin, that the Mahadrin, Minah Mahadrin, that when it comes to Hanukkah, we don't just light one candle every night, but rather we light each night commensurate to the night of Hanukkah that it is. On the second night we light two, and then three, and then four, and so forth. And if the Ashkenazi custom that everyone in the family lights, the Sephardic custom is that only the head of the household lights. But nonetheless, these are situations of hiddur mitzvah where the Chazal told us what to do, and in those situations, that is something that we have to follow. That's what that's a halacha, that it has to be hadar. However, on top of that, even beyond that, we have the idea of hiddur mitzvah that even with that, it should be nice. It should be done in a nice way. So therefore, we have in certain situations where the hiddur, where the exact beautification of the mitzvah is prescribed in halacha, but the broader concept is that a person doing the mitzvah should endeavor to do the mitzvah in the most beautiful way. And generally speaking, this applies to the item that you're using for the mitzvah itself. Now, I just want to make clear, you know, today we have, Baruch Hashem, you go into a Judaica store, and you will see that there are, you could buy, let's say, when it comes Sukkot time, so they have a whole array of esrog holders that you could buy, right, ranging from plastic, and then you move up the line to leather, and then you move up further to sterling silver. This type of thing is also a hither, but this is not a hither in the item of the mitzvah itself. In other words, when we have the halacha that we are supposed to beautify mitzvahs, what this primarily pertains to is the item that's being used for the mitzvah. The item that's being used for the mitzvah. So that it's very nice to get a beautiful esrog box, but really, the real hiddur mitzvah would be to get a beautiful esrog. Right now, not always when it comes to esrogim, you know, it's very, very few people, myself included, really know clearly what is a nicer esrog, what is what is better, what is worse, and sometimes we feel that the price may be arbitrary and so forth, and we don't know exactly what to look for. But when it comes to when it comes to other mitzvahs, for example, the mitzvah of mezuzah, I think, is a mitzvah where you see very often that people are very careful to get very beautiful mezuzah boxes. That the box that's going to be hanging, the case for the mezuzah that's going to be hanging on the wall, so it's very, very beautiful. But the real hiddur mitzvah is that the mezuzah itself, the parchment on which the Shema Yisrael is written, that the mezuzah is written, that should be done in a very nice way. And in reality, that is more important. That is more important than having the fancy box. So therefore, you know, when a person goes into, you know, the Judaica stores, and I'm not trying to take away their business, but I'm just saying you have to have a little bit of a priority. Before you go ahead and say, well, I'm going to get a sterling silver mezuzah case, you have to ask yourself, well, what kind of mezuzah am I putting into it? Right? If the mezuzah I'm putting into it is not such a great mezuzah, it wasn't written so nicely, right? There are different levels, there are different qualities of mezuzah, right? So then the real hiddur mitzvah would be first to invest a little bit more in the mezuzah itself. A person wants to glorify the mitzvah, really glorifying the mitzvah would be to get a nicer scroll for the mezuzah and then to put it in a nice box. Yes, sir.
So, I speak for myself, but the difference, the way you draw the line between the mitzvah and gaiva, I can understand.
Right.
You concentrate on the underlying, maybe the invisible portion.
Right. 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 Well, like everything else, in other words, a person, you know, Chazal say, "Kol Masecha Yiru Shem Shemayim," that everything a person does a person is supposed to do a Shem Shamayim. So therefore, you know, to go ahead and get a fancy, you know, mezuzah box, because that way everyone will come in and be impressed by what you have, you know, alright, that's not the idea of the Hidur Mitzvah. The Hidur Mitzvah is supposed to be with Shem Shamayim. But this is the idea of Hidur Mitzvah, and as I say, in certain situations, the Chazal specifically prescribe a Hidur Mitzvah, and that type of thing we're supposed to follow, and like I say again, this is particularly true when it comes to purchasing the Arba Minim for Sukkot, that there are certain halachas that the Chazal say this is considered Hadar and this is not considered Hadar. And really, in those types of situations, if a person is unsure, it would be best to consult with a person who maybe is an expert, or not always is the person selling it an expert, right? But a Rav or so forth would be someone who might have a little bit of an insight in that, but those are things where the Chazal said what the Hidur is. However, in the broader sense, there is a concept of, by every mitzvah, a person trying to do it in the nicest way. So as I say again, the main Hidur Mitzvah is by the item, what's called the Chefta Shel Mitzvah, the item of the mitzvah itself. But we do find that on top of that, there is an idea to beautify it externally. Like I was saying about the mezuzah cases, we find, they have here on the sheet, there's a Mishnah, Maseches Bikurim, where we find this, where the Mishnah says that the Ashirim, that we know the mitzvah of Bikurim, that a farmer would bring his first fruit to Yerushalayim every year. So it says that when they brought the Bikurim, it says, Ashirim mevi'im bikureyim bikolosos shel kesef v'shel zav. That the rich, the wealthy people, would bring the Bikurim on fancy platters of gold and silver. So even though the Bikurim, the mitzvah of Bikurim, is fulfilled simply by bringing the fruits to Yerushalayim and presenting them to the Kohen, right? So theoretically a person could just put them in a paper bag and hand them over to the Kohen. Nevertheless, we are told in the Chazal that the wealthy people back in the day used to, in order to glorify the mitzvah, they would put the fruits on beautiful silver trays, which by the way they got back. Right, they were not kept by the Kohanim. Those were given back, right? So it wasn't such a loss, but the fact of the matter is that that's what they did. So here we find in the Chazal the idea of glorifying the mitzvah externally, right? And this would really be the forerunner to the silver mezuzah cases and the esrog boxes and an atara that a person puts on a talis. Right? All of these things are glorifying a mitzvah, but the real Hidur Mitzvah is that the item of the mitzvah itself should be better. So that, to take another example, you know, let's say it came to a talis, okay, now I don't know, you know, exactly in terms of the quality, I'm not an expert in terms of, you know, you go into a Judaica store, a Swarm store, and they'll tell you that these tzitzis are better than those tzitzis and the way they were made and so forth. I don't know exactly, I'm not up to date on all the ins and outs, but theoretically, if one talis was better than another, it would be more worthwhile to invest the extra money in a better talis rather than to get the lesser talis and put an atara on it. Okay, because even though you're putting on this sterling atara, it's a very beautiful, I'm showing how important, how dear this mitzvah is to me, but the real glorification of the mitzvah is that the mitzvah itself, the item of the mitzvah itself, should be better. This is the din of Hidur Mitzvah. Yes? Yes. Yeah. Yes, I myself have been in the house of Gedolei Yisrael where I saw that they had the mezuzah wrapped in plastic, they didn't have a box at all, and they had it on the wall. So, Okay, fine, again, I'm not trying to say that you shouldn't do it, I'm just saying that there's a priority to priority. In other words, why does a person do that? A person does that because of Hidur Mitzvah. I want to glorify the mitzvah. Okay, that's very nice. Nothing wrong with that. But you have to bear in mind that the greater priority in that situation would be get a better mezuzah. Right? Put a few extra, if there is one, and we'll soon see exactly, you know, what a person has to do in order to do that. Now I just want to mention that there is another form of hiddur mitzvah which is not just a physical element that the mitzvah itself is nicer, but there is also an idea of hiddur mitzvah that a person should be in a good situation when he does the mitzvah. For example, we have at the end of Maseches Pesachim, the last parak of Pesachim, a very popular parak, Arvei Pesachim, that people learn, it has the dinim of the Pesach Seder in it, along with many other things. So there, the Mishnah tells us that on Erev Pesach, on the day before Pesach, a person should not eat past a certain point. A person should not eat a meal past Samach L'mincha, the Mishnah tells us, right, when it's already 9 hours in the day, in other words, a full 3 hours before the sunset, a person should not sit down and eat anything substantial. Why? The Mishnah tells us so that when he goes in to Pesach Seder and he sits down to eat the matzah, which is a mitzvah in the Torah, to eat matzah on the first night of Pesach, that matzah should be eaten with teyavon, that matzah should be eaten with an appetite. He should be happy to eat it. He shouldn't eat it like he has to force himself to eat it, but he should eat it with an appetite. Right? And Rashi tells us that the idea there is Mishum Hidr Mitzvah. Rashi says that the idea in that is because that is also a beautification of a mitzvah, which means, you know, it's hard for us to imagine the way we have a paper Seder, how you would not be hungry by the time you ate the matzah, because today you have all the haggadahs and you have the children come home from school with all kinds of different things that they want to say over, and everybody says the manishtana. So usually by the time you get around to eating the matzah, most people are hungry. Right? But nevertheless, the Chazal told us that a person should not eat on Erev Pesach past a certain point, so that when he eats the matzah, he should eat the matzah with an appetite. And this, Rashi explains, is due to hiddur mitzvah. This is a beautification of the mitzvah. So what this shows us is that not only should, you know, the matzah itself be made with hiddur, which is a discussion in itself, but the frame of mind of the person doing the mitzvah, should also be a positive frame of mind. If a person does a mitzvah begrudgingly, just to take an example which comes to us, if a mishloach, right, we are inundated the last number of years mishloach, and we have people knocking on the doors collecting tzedakah, right, so if a person comes to the door and you're going to give him tzedakah, now you're going to give that person tzedakah, so if you smile at the person, so then, and make him feel like you're not upset that you're giving him the money, that's a hiddur mitzvah. Because even though the actual mitzvah is to give him the tzedakah, but at the same time, you know, if he gets the impression that, you wish that anyone else in the world would have come to your door other than him, right, if you give him the impression that you're upset that he came, so then, even though you say, well, I did the mitzvah, I gave him tzedakah, it's true. But there's, again, this broader concept of hiddur mitzvah. Do it nicely. Say a nice word to the person. Make him feel good. It's an embarrassing situation that he's in the first place. Make him feel good in some manner to make him feel a little more comfortable. They say over a story, which I never really checked it out, but it sounds like it's probably accurate. They say, we know when it comes to baked matzahs, you know, we're already now, even though it's only going to be first Tu B'Shvat tomorrow, but if you go to the matzah bakeries in the various places in the world, they're all up and running. They've been up and running for a while, and it's fast and furious, right? We first start thinking about matzahs when it gets closer to Purim, or perhaps after Purim, but, you know, to supply matzahs for all over the world, it doesn't happen in a few days, right? So they're all up and running. And we know that when matzahs are baked, so the matzah that you eat at the Pesach Seder has to be baked l'shma, meaning that it has to be baked, that the person making the matzah has to have in mind that this matzah should be for the mitzvah of eating Pesach on the first night of Pesach. So the common practice is that, how do you get a person to do that? So if you ever went to a matzah baker, you will see that they tell the workers to say l'shem matzah mitzvah when they're preparing them, when they're rolling the dough, and when they're preparing the matzah to go into the oven, they tell the people to say l'shem matzah mitzvah. And a lot of times, you know, the person who comes in, who's leading, the person who's overseeing the baking of the matzahs could be overzealous, and he could get on the nerves of the people who are baking the matzahs. And it's not just with that halacha, but with other halachas. You know, he started making them crazy, you know, you didn't do this right, you didn't do that right. And we know that it has pretty much been the situation in the history of matzah baking, that generally the people involved in the matzah baking over the years in the Klal Yisrael were generally people who were on the lower end of the financial spectrum, right? People who were aniyim, who needed a job, right? Who needed work, so they would be the ones who would go in and bake the matzahs. So they say over that Rav Yisrael Salanter once told his Talmidim that when you go and bake the matzahs, if you want, there should be hiddur mitzvah in the matzahs. The hiddur mitzvah would be not to make the workers crazy. He said a lot of times these people are people who are poor, they're people almanas, yisomim, different people who are broken people. So it's true, you want to make sure that every little detail of the matzah is done correctly, because after all we know that there's a lot on the line when it comes to Pesach. But at the same time, there's a way to do it in which you're not harassing them. You're not harassing the workers. And Rabbi Yisrael said that this is his mitzvah. This would be his mitzvah. You did the mitzvah in a way that the people who did it weren't terrorized, right? It wasn't a traumatic experience for them to bake your matzahs. That's also his mitzvah. So if we think about it, that applies to a lot of different things. It applies to a person raising children, right? That, you know, a lot of times the parents become impatient with a child. How come you're not doing this properly, you know, and this is a mitzvah. I remember when I was your age, I already mastered this, and here you're not taking it seriously. But a lot of times you have to take into consideration that here's a mitzvah is that the person who does it should do it with a good attitude. They should go through their whole life doing it with a good attitude. If it started out as a negative impression, so then that's not a hiddur mitzvah. So therefore, we see from this Mishnah Mesachim, as I say, that there's a concept of hiddur mitzvah also with the way a person does the mitzvah. Not just in the physical sense, but also the approach and the attitude toward the mitzvah is also hiddur mitzvah. So this is, in general, the different aspects, the different types, the different examples of hiddur mitzvah. Now, the question that I would like to address is there a specific halachic parameter to this? Meaning, is it just a general idea that try to beautify the mitzvahs and do the best you can, and therefore it's up to each person to decide what they want to do? Or do we say that while that may be so, but there are also certain halachic requirements, that there are certain situations that you have to do it, and that you have to do it to a certain extent, even if it costs more, that perhaps there is a shear, perhaps there is a prescribed requirement to how this aspect of hiddur mitzvah should be carried forth. And to this end, we find a Gemara. This is discussed in one place in the Shas as a Gemara. Oddly enough, it's discussed in the Sefer Bava Kamma, which really does not deal with any mitzvahs, right? The Gemara Bava Kamma deals with the laws of damages, right? But yet, we find that on Daf Tes, in Bava Kamma, which is here on the sheet on the first side, right, we find the Gemara, which deals with this requirement. And the Gemara says, and it was over two different pages, so the person who made this sheet combine them. So we have here the Gemara says, V'chein amar avati, amar etzer, amar apuna, the mitzvah at shlish. The Gemara says that when it comes to a mitzvah at shlish, that you have to give up to a third, you have to give up to a third of your money for a mitzvah. So the Gemara says, my shlish, the Gemara says, what does that mean? Ilema shlish besos, does this mean that a person has to actually, for any given mitzvah, has to pay up to a third of their assets? Says the Gemara, if that's the case, El Meyata Yisrami Reitzvos Mitzvasa Reitzvokul Beis. The Gemara says, if that's the case, then you'll be wiped out in no time, right? It could be you'll have a situation, you know, three mitzvahs will come about that'll be difficult to get a hold of, and you'll be completely wiped out. And the Chazal felt that a person was not responsible to do that. Says the Gemara, that's perhaps a different discussion, but the Gemara says, Elo Amar Atzeira, the hinder mitzvah ad shlish b'mitzvah. The Gemara says that what this means is that there is a shir, that there is a halachic requirement of hidden mitzvah, and that is ad shlish b'mitzvah, up to a third of what the mitzvah costs, which means that that when it comes to glorifying a mitzvah, a person has to be willing to pay an additional third, up to an additional third of what the original mitzvah cost. And we'll explain this in detail in a moment. So before we get to Rashi, let's just continue one more line in the Gemara. The Gemara has a question, The Gemara has a question, when we say that you have to add an additional third, what does that mean? Does that mean a third from the inside or a third from the outside? What is the difference between the inside and the outside? So the example is that, let's say you had a mitzvah which the item of the mitzvah costs $6. Right? So if it costs $6, and now there's a nicer one. Now there's a nicer one to buy. So a third of six is two. So one way to understand the halacha, that hidden mitzvah that a person has to increase up to a third, would be to say that since a third of the original price is two, so therefore you add a two to the original six, and now we would say that you would be obligated to pay up to $8 to get the nicer mitzvah. If the nicer mitzvah costs $10, you would not have to buy it. But if it costs $8 or less, then you would have to buy it. That's one way to understand it. The Gemara has another way to understand it, that when we say a third, it means a third of the final price. What the Gemara refers to as a third from the outside. Meaning again, that if the item costs $6, so if you break six into two sections, right, so that would mean you would have two threes, right? You're half of six. If you broke six into two, you would have three and three. So a person, to add on a third, would have to add an additional three, meaning that you would have to pay up to $9 for the mitzvah. How is that a third? Because it's a third of the final price. In other words, the amount that you've added, right, only the Chazal could think of this, right, that the third that you've added is a third from the outside, meaning that if the original item costs $6, so now, if you'll pay $9, that means that what you paid was a third more, an increase of a third over the original price. In other words, in the sum total, the amount that you paid was $3, which is a third of nine. Up to that, you would be obligated. So, just to make life simple, if you went with the inside price, if you went with what the Gemara calls milagav, you would only have to pay up to $8. If you went with the outside price, it would be $9. So therefore, the chumrah would be the outside price, and of course, this is consistent with what we know in the business world, that the inside of price is always cheaper, right? So therefore, a good way to remember this, if a person, you know, it's always confusing what's the inside and what's the outside, the inside price, the milagav, is always cheaper. Right, so therefore the question is, do we say shlish milagav and therefore you only have to pay eight, or shlish milabar, in which case you would have to pay nine? Yes,
in other words, the outside price is $6, and that's two-thirds.
Correct, of the final price, the well said, right. That's correct. That's why I say, you break the original into two, and then add a third section. So six is two threes, and then you add a third three, so it's a sum total of nine. That's what the Chazal say. And the Gemara remains with a question on this point. Okay, so we see in this Gemara that apparently it's not just left up to the discretion of the person to do what they want, but it seems from this Gemara that there is a chiv to do this. And this chiv has a shir, that there is a prescribed amount, how much a person is supposed to do, and the question, and that amount, we have a Kabbalah, where did they get this number from? So this apparently is a Masorah they had from HaSinai. Some of the Mefarshim and Mashah attempts to explain where they derived this, how they arrived at this number of a third, but nevertheless, the idea is that there is a shir of a third, and the question is it a third from the inside or a third from the outside? But apparently there is a shir. Now, how do we understand this Gemara? So Rashi interprets this Gemara to be speaking. In other words, what is the context of this Gemara? The Gemara says that when it comes to Hidden Mitzvah, you have to be willing to add up to a third. What are we speaking about here? So Rashi says, on the second line in the left column, Rashi says, what does it mean, Hidden Mitzvah Achlish? Says Rashi, in Matzah Bei Sifrei Torah Liknos, that if a person finds two Sifrei Torah to buy, right, the Echad Hodim Echadero, and one is nicer than the other, he should add a third. Right? So that's the way Rashi explains it, which is pretty much the way we all would have understood it. That the Gemara is referring, a person goes to the store. Right? You go into the store, you want to buy a mezuzah. And the merchant says, okay, I have two mezuzahs. Okay, I have one, the standard is for $50, but we have a nicer one, and why is it nicer? You have to find out what makes it nicer. The price itself doesn't make it nicer. Right? You have to, otherwise, you know, it would be a good marketing angle, just when, if you produce mezuzahs, just charge more than everybody else, and then tell everybody they have to buy you a mezuzah because it's a mitzvah. Right? So obviously, the price itself does not dictate that it's better. You have to find out what makes it better. But assuming it's better, right, assuming it's better, if the person shows you that we have two mezuzahs, one costs $50 and one costs $60, so since $60 is less than a third according to both opinions, a person would really have to buy the better one. But this, because from this Gemara, it comes out that there is an obligation of Hidden Mitzvah, and there is a share attached to it. So therefore, that would be the share. The share would be that the share is a third, right? The amount of the mitzvah, the halakhic requirement goes up to a third. So again, if it's 50 and 60, so you really would have to, assuming you knew, you had reason to believe that the $60 one was better, was halakhically better, if that's the case, then a person, nicer sometimes, the way it's written, you know, some of the sofrim in Eretz Yisrael, I mean, let's face it, you know, there's tremendous demand nowadays for Sefer Torah and mezuzahs and tefillin, and you see sometimes, if you look at the scrolls, if you ever look at the parchment of mezuzahs, you'll see that there are some that are written very beautifully, that it's arranged line by line very beautifully, and there are others that are written almost like the person was in a big rush, right, and it's slanted, it's not, you know, even though they make lines, but still, you know, it doesn't look so nice, right? If you've ever inspected mezuzahs, you will see that, right? So therefore, now that alone is not the only hither, but assuming that was the hither, so then if you had the choice, you would have to get the more expensive one. This is the way Rashi warns the Gemara, and so too, it would apply to a lulav and so forth. Yes, I am.
You can buy one 45, 65, 80.
Okay, so right. So I don't know exactly how that would play out. How that would play out in terms of esrogim is a situation where you know, you have many, many choices, and not always, and I've seen this with my own eyes, and not always, I've seen many times where the merchants were selling a better esrog, a halakhically better esrog for a cheaper price. That, you know, because a lot of times people assess an esrog just by, you know, looking at it. Oh, it looks nice to me. And I remember years ago, I once went in, and I was living in New York, I went into a place that was run by a Hasidic person to buy a lulav. So the lulav that I found was, I considered to be a very acceptable lulav, but the only problem was it wasn't so long. So the person looked at me and said, she said, a hoicha man stop the hoicha wolf. He said to me, you can't buy a wolf like that. A tall person has to buy a tall wolf. How could you have a short wolf? You're a tall guy, you can't have a short wolf like that. And I looked through the whole Shulchan Aruch, I didn't find anywhere where anybody said such an opinion. Right? But nevertheless, this is the attitude that people have. You know, it has to be nice. You know, has to, when you walk around, like those shinies, it has to be impressive. You know, you have this big tall lulav, it looks very nice. But as I say again, that's an example where, you know, maybe assuming you fulfilled all the other halachic requirements of hither, maybe that would be something. Or I could be, I don't know. You know, you hear all kinds of opinions. You hear all kinds of opinions, but the fact of the matter is, when it comes to the slogan, I have often found that the price is not necessarily the indicative. Unless the merchant is a person who is very well trained in the halachas of Lulav and Esrog, which is often not the case, and I'm not saying this to be disrespectful to anyone, but that's just the way it is, because very few people, I remember once, again, back in the day, when I was living in New York, on the first day of Sukkot, I was in a shul where the Rav was a world-renowned gadol, a world-renowned, well, if I mentioned his name, you would immediately know who I was referring to. And I walked up to him that morning and I said, "Can I show you my Lulav and Esrog?" And he said, "I'll tell you the truth, I don't really know so well about it. I don't really know so much about it. So if you think it's good, it's probably good. I don't have an expert opinion." Because in that area of halacha, it happens to be that it's very hard to know. A person has to really be trained and have to have gone through the Shulchan Aruch very well. So I don't know. If you have multiples, I'll be honest with you, I'm not 100% clear. But I think to keep it simple for a minute, Rashi's case is speaking where you have two. Right? That's the simplest case. Where you have two to choose from, and one is better than the other, you have to add up to a third. This is the way Rashi explains the Gemara. Okay, now, the problem with this, many Rishonim, you know, you think when you read the Gemara, that's obviously what the Gemara is referring to. But yet, many Rishonim, and even the Halacha, what seems to be the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, is not this way. Right? And the reason why a lot of people don't like Rashi's interpretation of the Gemara is because they say that if Rashi is correct, if this is the determinant of Hidden Mitzvah, then you would get into a situation what's called in halacha, Ein L'davar Sof. Ein L'davar Sof means there's no end. Meaning, I'll go into this store to buy a mezuzah. Right, so in this store, the guy only has two types of mezuzahs to show me. Right, so okay, here's a mitzvah. I bought this, so I went ahead. I spent the extra money. I bought a better one. Okay, now I happens to be a few days later at another store. Right, and now I see this guy has a bigger selection of mezuzahs. Right, and because he has a bigger selection of mezuzahs, right, so now I say, and just out of curiosity, let me see what you have. And my eyes pop out. I say, every mezuzah he has is better than the one that I bought. And it happens to be that all of his mezuzahs, price-wise, are within the third range of the original mezuzah that I bought. So now, since I already bought this mezuzah, so now that's my baseline, right? That's the mezuzah that I have. And since the halacha demands that you have to pay up to a third more, so now I should have to get this one. Then I go to another store, and another store, and another store, then it was ever so. There's no end to it. You can have the mezuzah hanging on your wall, and lo and behold, you see, ooh, a new sofer moved into town, he has such beautiful mezuzahs, and the price is only $90, right? Which by the time you got yours, you already slowly increased it up and up and up and up to the point that you paid, let's say, $75, right? Which you thought was a king's ransom, right, for a mezuzah, and lo and behold, now he has one for $90. $90 is within the third, so now you have to get $90, and then this guy has one for $110, and so forth, aim with other soap. So on this basis, many Rishonim disagree, Tosus, the Rush, disagree with Rashi's Pshat, and they say that in fact this Gemara is not referring to the general concept of Hidden Mitzvah, but just in the interest of saving time, you can see it here, there's a very small Tosus, but it's more clearly spelled out in the Rush, in the back of the Gemara, where the Rush says that Rashi disagrees with Rashi's interpretation. In his opinion, when it comes to buying a mitzvah, there is no requirement, there is no halachic requirement to add a third. It's up to you if you want to, fine, but you're not obligated to do so. What is this Gemara referring to? Says the Rush, this Gemara is referring to a very specific case. This Gemara is speaking to a case, let's say by an Esrog, where a person, we know that when it comes to an Esrog, there's a minimum shear of an Esrog. What's the smallest an Esrog could be? The smallest an Esrog could be, there's a Machlokas in the Gemara, there's a Machlokas in the Mishnah, Sukkah, the smallest an Esrog could be, we hold Halacha, is the size of an egg. Right? That's the smallest Esrog that could be. Okay, you'll never see such an Esrog because that would not ever, because today we're Baruch Hashem, we have access to thousands and thousands of Esrogim, so therefore such an Esrog would never make it into the stores, right? They'll just reject it, you know, in the field. But the fact of the matter is that you could have an Esrog that's the absolute minimum shear. So the problem when you're dealing with something which has the minimum shear is that there's always the chance that it could shrink. And if it has the bare minimum shear, it could shrink to below the bare minimum shear, and then it's possible. So the Rush and Tosfos and others say that that's what this Gemara is referring to. This Gemara is not referring to a person who's going and goes into the store and has two mezuzahs to choose from. This Gemara is rather referring to a situation where a person goes in to buy an esrog, and the esrog that he bought, the only one available, was the absolute minimum shear. And now he comes across another one, so when he comes across another one, here there's a special halacha that you have to pay more, you have to pay up to a third of the price to get a newer one, to get a better one, but that's the only time there's a halachic requirement. There is no halachic requirement that if you were not dealing with such a case, which we will never, as the world continues the way it is, we will never confront such a situation, just about, right? Because any time you go into a store, everything today is done, you know, in a way that, you know, to try to make everyone happy. It's not that we are not minimalistic today, right? We do things with largesse, we do things in a very big way. So you'll go to get an esrog, you'll always see Esrogim that are, to begin with, bigger than the shear, much bigger than the shear, right, and so to mezuzahs, and so to Sifrei Torah, so therefore would come out that according to the Rush, this halacha that we find in this Gemara and Bava Kamma, which gives the shear of Hidr Mitzvah, that the shear is a third, it would come out that this halacha is essentially irrelevant. That it's essentially irrelevant. When it comes to what's when you go to buy a mezuzah and the guy has two, according to the opinion of the Rush, it's up to you. It's up to you. There's no halacha. There is no halacha that governs that, right? Whereas, according to Rashi, as we say, Rashi says there is a halacha that governs that, and the halacha, that's in fact, according to Rashi, what the Gemara is talking about. But the problem with Rashi is that everybody asks that it's aimless of herself, and we know halachically, when something results in an aimless of herself situation, you don't have to deal with it, right? So therefore, these are the two opinions. But as I say, there's a difficulty with Rashi's pshat. So if we look, if you turn over the sheet as far as the halacha is concerned, so sure enough, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch here, right, and these halachas are found in the halachas of Hidden Mitzvah are found in the Hilchas Law, that's where it's written, because that's where it's, as I say, most prominent is by Law of the Din of Hidra. Right, also by Chanukah, but mainly by Wuluf. So the Shulchan Aruch says the following. Shulchan Aruch is found on the top of the page. It says, "Imkana esrog sheroi lotzis bo b'tzimtzum." If a person buys an esrog which is sufficient, which is halachically acceptable, only by the bare minimum, b'tzimtzum, it is exactly the minimum shear. Shehu kibeya mitzumtzemes, which the Shulchan Aruch tells you what that shear is. The shear is exact the size of an egg, right? The size of an egg. The achakat matzah gadol mimenu, and after that, a person finds a bigger one. Mitzvah lahosif ashlish milegah. So the Shulchan Aruch says, in that situation, you would have to add a third milagav from the inside price, right? In other words, the cheaper amount. You would have to add a third from the inside, b'dmei harishon, kidei lachlifo b'yotrinor. That is the first opinion that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch. This opinion is attributed to the Rosh, also to a Rabbeinu Tam, even though the Rabbeinu Tam is not in the Tosfos here, it's quoted elsewhere. But these are the people who say this opinion. And then he says, "V'yesh mishomer." There are others who say, "She'imatzah shnei esrogim liknos." That if a person finds two esrogim to buy, "V'ho'echad hoder mechavero," and one is nicer than the other, "Yikach ha'hoder." You should buy the nicer one. "Im'ein mi'akrin also yosem mishlish milagav." The second opinion, which is under the heading of Yesh Misha Omer, Yesh Misha Omer means there is somebody who says, and this is a reference to Rashi's opinion, that the halacha that comes from the Gemara is speaking about a situation where a person finds two esrogim to buy, and one is better than the other, and it's within the third. In that situation, he would have to buy the better one. So here we find that the Shulchan Aruch brings both opinions. The Shulchan Aruch brings both opinions, but those who, if you study the Shulchan Aruch, you will know that in terms, he says, so which one is he holding by, right? These are two distinctly different opinions. The first opinion, or the opinion of Tulsus and the Rush, is that it only has to do with an asterisk. It has nothing to do with the mezuzah, it has nothing to do with any other mitzvah. There is no general requirement in halacha to add a third. There's no obligation to add a third. It's only true by an asterisk. Whereas the second opinion is radically different. The second opinion, which is Rashi's opinion, is that it applies to every mitzvah. And it applies not only in a situation where you're dealing with the minimum share, but in any situation where you find two to buy, that then you should buy the better one, if it's within a third. So you have both opinions brought here, and he hasn't said, so which one does he go by? Right? They're two different opinions. So the general rule is that in such a situation, the opinion that's listed as Yesh Misha Omer is not considered the primary opinion. Right? Now, this, of course, the Achronim, the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch usually hash this out, right? So it's not necessarily something that we do when we learn the Shulchan Aruch, but you can sort of get if you want to get a pulse on halacha, if you want to know, you know, what's most likely the din. So the first opinion is brought down as what's called a stam. He lists the opinion without any qualifications. He doesn't say this is only somebody says. He makes it sound like the first opinion is sort of the mainstream opinion, and then he says, Yesh Mishomer, there's also somebody who said the other thing. But if you would ask me, based on this, it would sound that the halacha would be like the first opinion, which would mean that if a person goes into the Judaica store to buy a mezuzah, there is no halachic obligation that demands that he get a better one. If the guy says the cheapest one I have is this price, you can get it, and there's no halachic requirement. Maybe there's a concept that you should try to do the nicer one, but there is no specific requirement that you have to get the better one. That's what it would seem it would come out from here. And in fact, the Bir Halacha, the Chofetz Chaim, the Mishnah Bir Halacha, seems like he thinks that, right? He says that it sounds, you know, it sounds like he holds the first thing is the main opinion. However, we find, in reality, the Chofetz Chaim brings down that it's not so. And the reason why it's not so is based on a Gemara that we find in Yerushalmi. It's based on a Gemara that we find in Yerushalmi Maseches Peah, because if you have here, it was on the original sheet, but then I had a special sheet made up for it at the last minute. If you look, the Yerushalmi is written in a different dialect of Aramaic than the Babli is, so it's much harder to decipher very often, right? But we'll do the best we can here. On this page here, in the text of the Gemara, if you go down, to the last, let's say, 7-8 lines on the page, so it says, Rabuna Omar, Lemitzvah Ad Shlish, that he says the same thing that we find in the Gemara of Bava Kamma, that when it comes to a mitzvah, it's up to a third. So the Yerushalmi proceeds to say, Ma, L'chol HaMitzvah Ad Shlish, O L'mitzvah Achatz. So without just in the interest of saving time, the Gemara says, Sovereign Neymar L'chol HaMitzvahs Ad Shlish. Right? That it means that for all mitzvahs a person should add a third, and if you skip down to lines, the Yerushalmi spells it out. It says, L'chach Adam Mitzvah, if a person bought an item for a mitzvah, Motza Acheres Naimena, if he finds a nicer one, Ad Kama Matrachinon, until what? How much do we make him pay extra? Achlish. So you see here that Yerushalmi, without any other opinion, Yerushalmi commenting on this halacha in the Gemara that we have, in the Babli, in Bava Kamma, the Gemara didn't spell it out. The Gemara was vague. The Gemara just said, up to a third. And the Gemara didn't say, what does that mean, up to a third? So we had Rashi's chat, and we had Tosus' chat. However, the Achronim point out, the Bir Agra points out, that if you look in the Yerushalmi, that we generally paskin halachas like the Talmud Babli. Right? That's the rule of thumb. However, there are certain times where there are things in the Babli that are unclear that we could take an elucidation, if it's clearer in the Yerushalmi, so we could take it from there. So here, the Agra says, look what it says, clearly like what Rashi said. It's clear. It says in Yerushalmi that if you bought a mitzvah and then you came across another one, you would have to add a third. So based on this, the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, the Bir Agra, and the Eliyahu Rabba, other Achronim say that really in the halacha you have to be machmir like both opinions. In other words, even though it's true that the mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch sounds like he goes mainly by Tosfos' opinion, which would save us all money, right? You go to buy a mezuzah, it would be cheaper, you don't have to get the better one. But Rashi's opinion, since Rashi's opinion is backed up by the Yerushalmi, so therefore they say that you should really be machmir like Rashi's opinion also. Now, I know it's over the time, we'll end in a second, so you'll ask me, right, if you're following here the discussion, you're holding the cheshbon, as they say, so you'll say to me, good, but what's the answer to the kasha? Right, the reason why they rejected Rashi Chan in the first place was because they had the question, aim with other slope. They said, that can't be, because if you always have to get the better one up to a third, there's no end. If you have a mezuzah, you'll be going store to store, and you can, even after you bought the mezuzah, you'll be hanging on your wall mezuzah, you find a better one, you have to buy it. So where does this thing end? So there are two answers given by the Achronim, and they all actually have a different nuance. Right? One answer that's given by the Achronim is that the halacha that Rashi says is only true before you bought it the first time. Meaning that if you're in the store and the guy shows you two, that's when the halacha would be you should get the better one. However, if in the store you were in, they only had one and that's the one you bought, and then you go into another store, and now you see, oh my gosh, there's much better mezuzah in this store. The halacha is you do not have, according to Rashi, you would not have to return the first one. Once you bought it, you bought it. That is how they answer the kasha of Ein L'Davar Sof, because the Shulchan Aruch was, the Gemara was only referring to a situation where he hasn't bought it yet. And the truth is, if you look in the words of the Shulchan Aruch, it seems very clearly that that's what he's holding. Because if you look again, Yesh Mishomer, Shehim Moshe Shnei Esrogim Liknos. When he brings the opinion of Rashi, he says, if you find two esrogim to buy, this is what you should do. In the first opinion, when he quoted the opinion of the Russian Tosfos, he said, in Kani, even if you bought it, in other words, according to the opinion of Tosfos, which is what we call much more lenient, if you bought a tiny esrog, and then you found in a different store a bigger one, you'd have to return the first one and get a second one, and get the other one. Because even though you bought it, that's no excuse. But in Rashi's Shita, to explain Rashi's opinion, they say that once that it's only before you bought it. But once you bought it, the din of hidden mitzvah would go away. This is what some Achronim say. Other Achronim say, the Vilna Gaon says, a second explanation, which is a bit more machmir, which is, the way he answers the kasha of Ein L'Davar Sof is, that he disagrees with what we just said. He said that even if you bought it, if you found another one, you would have to switch it to get the other one. However, he says, it's only once. It's only one time. That's what the Gra says. It's only once, not forever. In other words, look, if you walked out of the first store with a mezuzah, and now you go into the second store, and you say, wow, he has better mezuzahs, then you should go return the first one and get a second one, even if you get the other one, even according to Rashi. However, you'll say, what do you mean, Ein L'Davar Sof, Tosfos is kasha, what do you mean, Ein L'Davar Sof? Says the Gra that it's only one time that you have to do that. Once you did it once, now you're done. Now you're done. So if you go into a third store, you don't have to feel guilty. You could have the one that you have. In the halacha, I believe the way it comes out is that the chumrah would be to follow this opinion of the Gra, right, which is that even one time to switch it. So this is the way the poskim come out. It comes out that really in the halacha we do concern ourselves with Rashi's opinion, and therefore it would apply to every mitzvah. If a person is in a store and has two choices, should really take the nice, it's a chiv, it's not just a nice thing to do. It's a chiv to do such a thing, that a person, you can't just get the cheapest one. If they have a nicer one, you have to get the nicer one. Right? However, once you bought it, according to some, you're done. Once you bought it, according to others, if you went into another store one time, you would have to switch it, but not more than that. And I would just point out that the poskim say that under no circumstances are you ever obligated to buy a second one. Meaning that even when we say that if you find a nicer one, you should switch it, that's only if the guy will take the first one back. But if you go to you went to store A and bought a mezuzah, then you saw a nicer one in store B, and now you go back to store A and say, I'd like to return it. And the guy says, didn't you read the sign? It says no returns on mezuzahs. Right, because he knows the guy down the block has nicer ones. Right? No return on mezuzahs. In such a situation, the halacha is you would not, according to everybody, you would not be mechuyev to end up with two. Once you have it, you have it. If you're going to be stuck with it, then you're not mechuyev. Again, we're talking in terms of the obligation of the halacha. You're not mechuyev. In the bigger picture, if a person says, "Well, Baruch Hashem has blessed me with the ability, I have a comfortable income, I have the ability to do more," so then it's always a nice thing to do more. And I would just end. I apologize for being over the time, but I would just end because Gemara in Bava Kamma says that even the shear that the Chachamim gave of Ash Shlish, when the Chachamim said that the obligation is up to a third, so the Gemara says that Ash Shlish Mishalo, it's on the sheet, it says, Ash Shlish up to a third is Mishalo. Mikan Ve'eluch Mishalo Kodesh Baruch Hu, which means that what the way Rashi explains the Gemara, that up to a third is the halachic obligation. And like any other mitzvah, we know that when you do a mitzvah, the Chazal tell us, Char mitzvah b'hayal meleka. The reward of a mitzvah is not paid back in this world. So up to a third, you know, like any other mitzvah, sometimes the person wonders, I do mitzvahs, how come I have struggles in life? The answer is because the mitzvahs are not paid out in this world. Right? It's good that they're not paid out in this world. Much better a person should have an olam haba, right? So therefore, they, you don't get it paid out in this world, says the Gemara, mikan ve'eluch. But if a person spends more than a third to beautify a mitzvah, mishal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it comes from Hashem. What does it mean it comes from Hashem? So Rashi's explanation of this is that Hashem will pay the person back in the olam haba and in the olam hazeh, which means that the principle, the reward, the principle, the keren will be in the olam haba, but for this he will get a reward even in the olam hazeh. So therefore, if a person has the ability, and he says, I have the ability to get a nicer one, but I'm concerned about spending the money, so if you don't have the money, you don't have the money. But if a person is capable of doing it easily, so then you should just keep in mind that if you get the nicer one, you'll reap the benefits of that even in this world. Yes, sir.